I appreciate your advice, he said, and your concern for my career. You're welcome, I said. Go on, he said. Okay, I said. According to your fancy definition, I don't come from anywhere. I come from a place called military. I was born on a U.S. Army base in West Berlin. My old man was Marine Corps, and my mother was a French civilian he met in Holland. They got married in Korea. Finley nodded, made a note. I was a military kid, I said. Show me a list of U.S. bases all around the world, and that's a list of where I lived. I did high school in 24 different countries, and I did 4 years up at West Point. Go on, Finley said. I stayed in the Army, I said. Military police. I served and lived in all those bases all over again. Then, Finley, after 36 years of first being an officer's kid and then being an officer myself, suddenly there's no need for a great big army anymore because the Soviets have gone belly up. So, hooray, we get the peace dividend, which for you means your taxes get spent on something else, but for me means I'm a 36-year-old, unemployed, ex-military policeman getting called a vagrant by smug civilian bastards who wouldn't last 5 minutes in the world I survived. He thought for a moment. Wasn't impressed. Continue, he said. I shrugged at him. So right now, I'm just enjoying myself, I said. Maybe eventually I'll find something to do, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll settle somewhere, maybe I won't. But right now, I'm not looking to. He nodded, jotted some more notes. When did you leave the army? He asked. 6 months ago, I said. April. Have you, worked at all since then? He asked. You're joking, I said. When was the last time you looked for work? April. He mimicked. 6 months ago, I got this job. Well, good for you, Finley, I said. I couldn't think of anything else to say. Finley gazed at me for a moment. What have you been living on? He asked. What rank did you hold? Major, I said. They give you severance pay when they kick you out. Still got most of it. Trying to make it last, you know? A long silence. Finley drummed a rhythm with the wrong end of his pen. So, let's talk about the last 24 hours, he said. I sighed. Now I was heading for trouble. I came up on the Greyhound bus, I said. Got off at the county road, 8 o'clock this morning. Walked down into town, reached that diner, ordered breakfast, and I was eating it when your guys came by and hauled me in. You got business here? He asked. I shook my head. I'm out of work, I said. I haven't got any business anywhere. He wrote that down. Where did you get on the bus? He asked me. In Tampa, I said. Left at midnight last night. Tampa in Florida? He asked. I nodded. He rattled open another drawer, pulled out a Greyhound schedule, rifted open and ran a long brown finger down a page. This was a very thorough guy. He looked across at me. That's an express bus, he said. Runs straight through north to Atlanta. Arrives there 9 o'clock in the morning. Doesn't stop here at 8. I shook my head. I asked the driver to stop, I said. He said he shouldn't, but he did. Stopped specially, let me off. You been around here before? He asked. I shook my head again. Got family down here? He asked. Not down here, I said. You got family anywhere? He asked. A brother up in D.C., I said. Works for the Treasury Department. You got friends down here in Georgia? He asked. Nope, I said. Finley wrote it all down. Then there was a long silence. I knew for sure what the next question was going to be. So, why? He asked, Why get off the bus at an unscheduled stop and walk 14 miles in the rain to a place you had absolutely no reason to go to? That was the killer question. Finley had picked it out right away. So would a prosecutor. And I had no real answer. "What can I tell you?" I said. "It was an arbitrary decision. I was restless. I have to be somewhere, right?" "But why here?" he said. "I don't know," I said. "Guy next to me had a map, and I picked this place out. I wanted to get off the main drags. Thought I could loop back down toward the Gulf, further west, maybe." "You picked this place out," Finley said. "Don't give me that shit. How could you pick this place out? It's just a name. It's just a dot on the map. You must have had a reason." I nodded. "I thought I'd come and look for Blind Blake," I said. "Who the hell is Blind Blake?" he said. I watched him evaluating scenarios like a chess computer evaluates moves. Was Blind Blake my friend? My enemy? My accomplice, conspirator, mentor, creditor, debtor, my next victim? I watched him evaluating scenarios like a chess computer evaluates moves. Was Blind Blake my friend, my enemy, my accomplice, conspirator, mentor, creditor, debtor, my next victim? "Blind Blake was a guitar player," I said. "Died 60 years ago, maybe murdered. My brother bought a record. Sleeve notes said it happened in Margrave. He wrote me about it. Said he was through here a couple of times in the spring, some kind of business. I thought I'd come down and check the story out." Finley looked blank. It must have sounded pretty thin to him. It would have sounded pretty thin to me, too, in his position. "You came here looking for a guitar player," he said. "A guitar player who died 60 years ago. Why? Are you a guitar player?"
"No,"
I said. "How did your brother write you?" he asked. "When you got no address."
"He wrote my old unit," I said. "They forward my mail to my bank where I put my severance pay. They send it on when I wire them for cash."
He shook his head, made a note. "The Midnight Greyhound out of Tampa, right?" he said. I nodded. "Got your bus ticket?" he asked.
"In the property bag, I guess," I said. I remembered Baker bagging up all my pocket junk, Stevenson tagging it.
"Would the bus driver remember?" Finley said.
"Maybe," I said. "It was a special stop. I had to ask him."
I became like a spectator. The situation became abstract. My job had been not that different from Finley's. I had an odd feeling of conferring with him about somebody else's case, like we were colleagues discussing a knotty problem.
"Why aren't you working?" Finley asked.
I shrugged, tried to explain. "Because I don't want to work," I said. "I worked 13 years, got me nowhere. I feel like I tried it their way, and to hell with them. Now I'm going to try my way."
Finley sat and gazed at me. "Did you have any trouble in the army?" he said.
"No more than you did in Boston," I said.
He was surprised.
"What do you mean by that?" he said.
"You did 20 years in Boston," I said.
"That's what you told me, Finley. So why are you down here in this no-account little place? You should be taking your pension, going out fishing, Cape Cod or wherever. What's your story?"
"That's my business, Mr. Reacher," he said. "Answer my question."
I shrugged. "Ask the army," I said.
"I will," he said. "You can be damn sure of that. Did you get an honorable discharge?"
"Would they give me severance if I didn't?" I said.
"Why should I believe they gave you a dime?" he said. "You live like a damn vagrant. Honorable discharge, yes or no?"
"Yes," I said. "Of course." He made another note, thought for a while.
"How did it make you feel, being let go?" he asked.
I thought about it, shrugged at him.
"Didn't make me feel like anything," I said. Made me feel like I was in the army, and now I'm not in the army. Do you feel bitter? He said. Let down?
No,
I said. Should I? No problems at all, he asked, like there had to be something. I felt like I had to give him some kind of an answer, but I couldn't think of anything. I had been in the service since the day I was born. Now I was out. Being out felt great, felt like freedom, like all my life I'd had a slight headache, not noticing until it was gone. My only problem was making a living. How to make a living without giving up the freedom was not an easy trick. I hadn't earned a cent in 6 months. That was my only problem. But I wasn't about to tell Finley that. He'd see it as a motive. He'd think I had decided to bankroll my vagrant lifestyle by robbing people at warehouses and then killing them.
I guess the transition is hard to manage, I said, especially since I had the life as a kid, too.
Finley nodded, considered my answer. Why you in particular, he said. Did you volunteer to muster out?
I never volunteer for anything, I said. Soldier's basic rule. Another silence.
Did you specialize, he asked, in the service?
General duties initially, I said. That's the system. Then I handled secret security for 5 years. Then the last 6 years I handled something else.
Let him ask. What was that? He asked.
Homicide investigation, I said.
Finley leaned right back, grunted, did the steepled fingers thing again. He gazed at me and exhaled, sat forward, pointed a finger at me. Right, he said. I'm going to check you out. We've got your prints. Those should be on file with the Army. We'll get your service record, all of it, all the details. We'll check with the bus company, check your ticket, find the driver, find the passengers. If what you say is right, we'll know soon enough. And if it's true, it may let you off the hook. Obviously, certain details of timing and methodology will determine the matter. Those details are as yet unclear.
He paused and exhaled again, looked right at me.
In the meantime, I'm a cautious man, he said. On the face of it, you look bad. A drifter, a vagrant, no address, no history. Your story may be bullshit. You may be a fugitive. You may have been murdering people left and right in a dozen states. I just don't know. I can't be expected to give you the benefit of the doubt. Right now, why should I even have any doubt? You stay locked up until we know for sure. Okay?
It was what I had expected. It was exactly what I would have said. But I just looked at him and shook my head.
You're a cautious guy, I said. That's for damn sure.
He looked back at me.
If I'm wrong, I'll buy you lunch on Monday, he said. At Eno's place, to make up for today.
I shook my head again. I'm not looking for a buddy down here, I said. Finley just shrugged, clicked off the tape recorder, rewound, took out the tape, wrote on it.
He buzzed the intercom on the big rosewood desk, asked Baker to come back in.
I waited. It was still cold, but I had finally dried out. The rain had fallen out of the Georgia sky and had soaked into me. Now it had been sucked out again by the dried office air. A dehumidifier had sucked it out and piped it away.
Baker knocked and entered. Finley told him to escort me to the cells. Then he nodded to me. It was a nod which said, "If you turn out not to be the guy, remember, I was just doing my job." I nodded back. Mine was a nod which said, "While you're covering your ass, there's a killer running about outside." The cell block was really just a wide alcove off the main open-plan squad room. It was divided into three separate cells with vertical bars. The front wall was all bars. A gate section hinged into each cell. The metalwork had a fabulous, dull glitter. Looked like titanium. Each cell was carpeted, but totally empty. No furniture or bed ledge, just a high-budget version of the old-fashioned holding pens you used to see.
No overnight accommodation here? I asked Baker.
No way, he replied. You'll be moved to the state facility later. Bus comes by at 6. Bus brings you back Monday.
He clanged the gate shut and turned his key. I heard bolts socket home all around the rim. Electric. I took the newspaper out of my pocket, took off my coat and rolled it up, lay flat on the floor and crammed the coat under my head. Now I was truly pissed off. I was going to prison for the weekend. I wasn't staying in a station house cell. Not that I had any other plans. But I knew about civilian prisons. A lot of army deserters end up in civilian prisons, for one thing or another. The system notifies the army. Military policemen get sent to bring them back. So I'd seen civilian prisons. They didn't make me wild with enthusiasm. I lay angrily listening to the hum of the squad room. Phones rang, keyboards pattered, the tempo rose and fell, officers moved about, talking low. Then I tried to finish reading the borrowed newspaper. It was full of shit about the president and his campaign to get himself elected again for a second term. The old guy was down in Pensacola on the Gulf Coast. He was aiming to get the budget balanced before his grandchildren's hair turned white. He was cutting things like a guy with a machete blasting his way through the jungle. Down in Pensacola, he was sticking it to the Coast Guard. They'd been running an initiative for the last 12 months. They'd been out in force like a curved shield off Florida's coast every day for a year, boarding and searching all the marine traffic they didn't like the smell of. It had been announced with an enormous fanfare, and it had been successful beyond their wildest dreams. They'd seized all kinds of stuff, drugs mostly, but guns as well. Illegal migrants from Haiti and Cuba. The interdiction was reducing crime all over the states months later and thousands of miles further down the line. A big success. So, it was being abandoned. It was very expensive to run. The Coast Guard's budget was in a serious deficit. The president said he couldn't increase it. In fact, he'd have to cut it. The economy was in a mess. Nothing else he could do. So the interdiction initiative would be canceled in 7 days' time. The president was trying to come across like a statesman. Law enforcement big shots were angry because they figured prevention was better than cure. Washington insiders were happy because 50 cents spent on beat cops was much more visible than $2 spent out on the ocean 2,000 miles away from the voters. The arguments flew back and forth. And in the smudgy photographs, the president was just beaming away like a statesman saying there was nothing he could do. I stopped reading because it was just making me angrier. To calm down, I ran music through my head. The chorus in Smokestack Lightning. The Howling Wolf version puts a wonderful strangled cry on the end of the first line. They say you need to ride the rails for a while to understand the traveling blues. They're wrong. To understand the traveling blues, you need to be locked down somewhere, in a cell, or in the army, someplace where you're caged, someplace where Smokestack Lightning looks like a faraway beacon of impossible freedom. I lay there with my coat as a pillow and listened to the music in my head. At the end of the third chorus, I fell asleep.